Welcome to episode 18 of Double Dodge. This one's called Deep Dish Diggler. And on this episode, we talk to my arch nemesis and Campbell's sort of arch nemesis, Alex Botsy Bots. Campbell, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad.
Nice. Yeah, we talked to Mr. Bots. He is the goose to our duck. About how Jordan chose to return to his former shape of the merman form. And we also delve into some of the US meta and specifically the Chicago meta, which is actually a really interesting chat.
Yeah, who would have thought Botsy could be so forthcoming and so interesting? I guess he's some kind of opinion maker.
He is some kind of opinion maker. So I think some people thought that hell might freeze over before this would happen, but we got all the lawyers together and coordinated a time, and he was willing to come on.
Yeah, that's a pretty, it's not a long chat, but it's a good chat, and yep. He was very, very generous with his time, which we appreciate.
Yeah, absolutely. I have been slamming him this morning, though, because towards the end, we came up with this new concept, where he could dish out a matchup for us, which we then played in the subsequent Carball. And I don't want to do too much of a spoiler, but I was displeased with the outcome.
Yeah, so the second half of the cast is a variation on the Carball theme. We've called it Carball Slugfuck because essentially it's like watching two slugs fuck. And yes, we take a ridiculous matchup, we play it, and then we talk about it. Not certain that we've settled on this format, because it wasn't the best of outcomes.
It was slightly one-sided. I did even ask Alex for some other ones, and he just gave me another ridiculous one-sided one. So I think we'll throw it out to the Twitter fans, if they can tweet us some matchups. Maybe not so much one-sided matchups, but interesting, slugfests is kind of what we're looking for.
So maybe put your thinking caps on if you could be fucked, and yeah, send us something on Twitter or throw us something on the forums, and we will be sure to incorporate that into the slugfuck regime.
Nice.
So we got any shout-outs, Cam?
We always like to shout-out Daryl from NerdvarnaGamesSA.com. He's a legend, sponsors us, sponsors all our events. I think even one of the national events, or the events at our Australian Nationals, is being sponsored by him, and it's being named after his company. So jump on his website, buy stuff from him, makes us look good, and it's good for the community.
Indeed. So, without further ado, I think we'll get into this. Let's go talk to Botsy.
Let's do it.
All right, our guest tonight is a prominent member of the Guildball community, with his long list of achievements, including successfully advocating for changes to the tiebreak system, arguing against the use of the term anti-vaxxer in Guildball debate, being a leading proponent of a priori reasoning in Guildball analysis and a staunch objector to empirical epistemology, zealously spearheading the charge against cardboard harvest markers, being the inventor of the Deep Dish Diggler, one of the most imaginative and disgusting sex acts of the last decade, and finally, a member of Strictly the Worst podcast and boasting a fine record of competitive play, my personal nemesis, Alex Botsy Bots. How are you, Alex?
Much better after the fanfare. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. And Campbell is also on the line.
How are you going, Alex?
Doing all right.
Good. That was one hell of an intro. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah, I'm flattered.
We're defined by our enemies, Campbell.
Yeah, he is the yin to our yang, the Lex to our Clark.
Well, this has been a long time coming, Alex, so let's get into it. Question number one. Is it true that Jordan quit Strictly the Worst to return to his first and true love, the sea?
It is true. We tried to keep that under wraps for a while, but he's currently at least 30 feet underwater at all times, and it's pretty hard to talk to him over the phone nowadays.
Oxygen? No oxygen?
As far as I'm aware, he's never breathed in his life.
That is an excellent answer. Question number two. On a scale of Dave Scotland to Jared McGraw, Why are you so angry about Harvest Markers?
I don't know where that falls on the scale. The honest answer is I don't think I was actually as mad as everybody seemed to think I was on Twitter, but once everybody was arguing about it, then I got genuinely angry. And I think that there's a line to toe that Steamforge could toe between accessible, which is clearly what they're aiming for with all of their like single piece models and stuff like that, and still catering to the hobby fan base. And I think things like cardboard harvest markers are a misstep when they could be single piece plastic models. And I just think that the harvest markers are so important to the farmers and the way they play. I'm sure if you guys have tested the farmers, it's obvious. Like their whole thing is the harvest markers, right? In the same way that like the whole thing for Mason or for Butchers is doing damage, the whole thing for Hunters is like doing nothing. Well, that's their theme, right? I assume that was the design theme.
Snare and nothing.
It's like snare and being penalized for having snared. But anyway, I don't know. I'll live with the fact that there's going to be cardboard harvest markers, and I'll probably make my own anyway. It just feels like a misstep and sort of a disservice to people who just want to crack open the farmer's box and start playing.
Well, you might be happy to know, Alex, that that we have been in tense negotiations with Jackal Designs, a fine South Australian company, to have them knock up a set of custom harvest markers. we're sort of talking about naming rights, but it's looking like it's going to be the Alex Botts range.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, in your honor.
Oh, Jesus. All right, well, I guess I have to buy a set of those then.
I guess you do. I guess you do. Don't say we don't ever do anything for you, Alex.
Sure.
Question number three.
Mm-hmm.
What have you got to say to Alex Botts?
Oh, my friend, why are you still on Twitter? and he doesn't have an answer.
Right. Supplementary question. What have you got to say to Double Dodge?
Geez, I don't know. Thanks for having me on the show.
I was actually expecting a bit more vitriol, but that's okay.
I don't know. It's hard to curse you guys out when I'm staring you right in the profile pictures.
Yes. Yeah, we're much more charming in real life. That's the reality. That was kind of underwhelming. So much build up.
Sorry, man. I don't know how I could top what people were expecting from what I had to say to myself.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost existential at that point. That's okay. It's okay.
I'm sure we all have a lot to say to ourselves.
Indeed. Or some of us, like Cam, just push our feelings down until they turn into cancer.
Wow.
It's dark, man. Sorry. It's dark.
Sorry for your loss.
Well, that concludes the quickfire question round. And I think that moves into probably the bulk of the discussion we wanted to have with you. We are keen to chat about the WTC, Cam in particular. So I'm going to throw to him.
We did obviously vet this beforehand in terms of what we wanted to chat about. And Australia don't have a WTC side going that I'm aware of. I think distance is part of it. But I was keen because I love the strategy involved in the three kind of player format. So I was keen to have a chat about it. First question, and it's one we've already chatted about off air, but I'm making the assumption Jordan won't be in the US WTC side or one of the WTC sides.
So let me just say beforehand that I'm pretty sad that you guys are not sending a WTC team over because
I'm sad.
If for me WTC would basically just be about beating Australian players over and over. So the fact that I can't do that, maybe next year. But yeah, that's right. Jordan is not going to be on the WTC team as far as we're aware. And given that it's about a week and a half now until the teams have to be locked, like in terms of which people are playing, not in terms of what guilds they're playing, we're just working under the assumption that he's not going to be in there. So the teams are being reorganized at least a little bit. I can't tell you how because I don't actually know how. In America, there was a small committee set up with people like Jason Lee Tate, and the infamous hashtag banned salmons, who are like in charge of organizing the teams and maybe doing a bit of fundraising and stuff. And I don't know what they've decided for who's going to take Jordan's place or whether the teams are going to shuffle around otherwise. Yeah, that's basically the state. I don't think, even though, no question, Jordan is an excellent player, I'm still fairly confident that America has a good shot of taking the thing, or at least being in the finals and competing. And I'm still definitely looking forward to the thing, even without Jordan.
So, is it true? I read on the forums that Dan Sammons is actually two guys in an oversized bear costume.
Yeah, I think it's something like that. I've only ever spoken to one of them, but occasionally I'll see the lower one hand stuff to the top guy, okay, which he'll then hit me with. Yeah, that's right. And I think there's one guy that like that says that everybody should get good, and there's the other guy that just like sends angry balance changes to Steamforge at 2 a.m.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. I also heard a rumor that Dan actually had 4 testicles, but now that you've explained it, it makes more sense.
Yeah, the math works out a bit better once you get the organization under the suit.
Yes, yes. Yeah, they count them as a grouping, which...
Right.
Yeah.
One of the guys is upside down. Are all 4 testicles together? Is that how they're doing it?
That's actually how they're bound together.
Okay. Now I've got a much better picture in my head. Trying to rein this conversation slightly back towards specifically. Have you been doing sort of, you know, in terms of WTC and the teams? Part of the conversation I wanted to get around was actually the idea of 3 teams and then looking at what list matchups and how to play that, because I feel that that's going to be the strongest component, obviously gameplays. You know, have you actually had a look at what you would think is, 3 strong teams to take, or 3 strong guilds, sorry, to take into a WTC tournament?
Yeah, absolutely. Just on the off chance that, you know, another WTC player might possibly listen to this 2-bit podcast, I'm not going to tell you what we're definitely running. And I actually don't know, because again, the Jordan issue. I think probably most people's gut reaction to it was that a team of Fish, Alchemists, and Union would be like the obviously strongest choice. I think there's competition for engineers taking either of the 2 slots that aren't alchemists, and I personally am considering bringing farmers to the WTC, but I'm not 100% sure on that. The general gist that I think most teams will follow is that there should be at least one of your 3 teams should be relatively comfortable into pretty much every matchup. And at least one of your teams should be very strong into some matchups, but wanting to dodge some. So in the Fish Alchemist Union lineup, the takes all comers would be the Alchemists. That's because I don't know if people know me, they've probably listened to the podcast. Most recently, we talked about Alchemists on our podcast, and we think that Alchemists are extremely strong, definitely the best guild in the game at the moment. And the organized play document changes that came in a month and a half ago or whenever that was, the ones about the captain draft, think those hurt Fish more than they hurt Alchemists. So Alchemists are kind of alone at the top. So Alchemists would be your take all comers that can kind of just blindly go in and get whatever matchup they get, assuming the player is comfortable with that. And then on the other side, Union, I think, having played a ton of Union, would be the team that has a lot of great matchups, but a few that they want to dodge. And in particular, as a Union player, I really hate seeing Fish, and I would prefer not to see Alchemists, but I think I can handle it. So I think the strategy there would revolve around putting the Alchemists in wherever they are, and then trying to keep opponents' Fish away from my Union at all costs.
Yeah, so basically, to get this straight, because I'm pretty sure this is how it works, but I'll confirm with you, each team lays out 1 player, and let's say there's 3 tables, 1, 2, and 3, the first team lays 1 player on table 1, the other team lays a player on table 3, is that correct?
And so exactly.
You have the opportunity to pick your 2 players that will go 1 against that opponent's already sat down and 1 into that middle table that you don't know the matchup.
That's exactly right, yes. The first 2 picks are blind, and then the second wave is also blind, but having seen what the opponent put on their first table, basically.
So you could go. So in your situation, hypothetically, you'd throw Alkies down if you've got a really strong Alky player. You throw them down, they can play against anyone. And then depending upon what they've put down on their table 3, that's when you can potentially throw a union, or you might go, look, hey, they've just put down, I don't know, Butchers. Yeah, I'll take that. No worries. I can play that matchup. And, you know, then you've just got to look at whatever their third one is and whether your third can match up against that.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's – I think that unless your opponents have some really weird list of teams, like if they had like two fish players and one guy's only playing Corsair and one guy's only playing Shark or something like that, and in a sort of baseline collection of three good guilds, I think that's probably how you want to play pretty much every matchup. I think the most interesting diversity will be in like the team selection. That is the guild selection. I don't know. You guys are on social media, obviously, so you've probably seen all the complaining both about scoring and about not scoring. I think the game in general is in a really extreme place right now. Guilds are willing to do a thing where they play like a mixed game, where they'll keep the ball in play and go for like a 2-2 victory regardless of their guilds. Like that's something that definitely people like aspire to, but not everybody makes it happen. And a lot of people are much more willing to like kill the ball or go for three goals with Shark or whatever. So being like responding to that meta in different ways with guild selection is interesting to me. Because on the one hand you have people like Shark and Midas who score super fast, but then you also have people like Ballista or Corsair who are really good at like defending the ball and holding a place down and trying to like expecting people to play lots of things like Midas and Shark and even the like less good striker captains like Brisket 3 or Skatha or whoever. And then teching against that by building your team around like Corsair and Blackheart and Ballista. I think that's an interesting way to go that WTC teams could take a lot of success from.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, going off, you know, what I've seen in the War Horde side of thing, the War Machine WTC, there's always be some countries or some teams that will, you know, be the special unique snowflakes and take something slightly different. But I do like the idea that, yeah, people will try to kind of game the meta and, you know, bring those skewers. Yeah. I think ultimately in Guild Ball's a pretty, you know, more player skill-based game that it will come more down to, yeah, the quality of your players and not so much just, you know, what matchups you managed to engineer in the pairing process.
Definitely. And there's also something to be said that there's just less matchups in Guild Ball. Like there's just less captains, less guilds than there are factions and warcasters in War Machine. That said, I'm definitely looking forward to your guys' favorite nation, Germany. I'm looking forward to what they play because I assume it will be nuts.
It's all engineers, and they've only got two captains, isn't it? Something like that. But didn't they all take engineers to Vengeance? There was like 9 Germans or something went over to Vengeance.
Is that true? I didn't actually...
It was something weird like that, yeah.
That doesn't surprise me. Yeah, Tim is a special guy, as you guys well know.
yeah. But he's pretty good, and by all accounts, there's a few people over there that have put him to the sword occasionally. So I reckon Germany, you know, pretty strong.
Yeah, all things being equal, if I could, like, just teleport anywhere in the world, the first place I'd go to play Guild Ball is Germany, just because I'm so fucking curious about it. When Tim's always fucking posting that shit on Twitter about, like, oh, hunters are good because I just went 12-0 against X, Y, and Z 3 times. And I just want to, like, shake him and be like, no, that's just because you're better than those people.
Yeah, it would be interesting to see, and this is probably where WTC will be a fantastic kind of...
Absolutely.
Proving ground in some respects. Obviously, the tournament's won, but even if you guys, you know, get games, you know, in the evenings or whatever and just, yeah, case each other out and see who, you know, who gets the bragging rights off the field as well. So,
yeah, that's definitely going to be
pretty hard to match Timmy, though.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to play him because I want to know what the hell is happening over there in Germany. There was some tournament that Tim won, like 2 or 3 months ago, where he lost it in the finals, and he was playing Pinvice only, and he lost it to fucking Hammer. That's like that's like a made up joke in Chicago.
Yeah.
They do seem to do it differently over there. I mean, you've got to wonder about American isolationism in that sort of context, though, don't you?
For sure, and I mean, there's not I'm not. I'm not under the impression that like we have an objectively correct understanding of the game over here, but I think that we, most of the things we think about the game are fairly well-reasoned and also fairly borne out by evidence. Not always, and we're always changing our opinions. But Germany, whereas everywhere else, when people talk about the game, it's like, okay, I disagree with this point, but I can sort of see where you're coming from, and I can understand what you're, like, what the context is, or, like, what you guys must be doing to get to that point. And Germany is just like, what the hell is happening? Who are you people?
Mm. We've thought that a long time about the Germans.
Yeah, they do seem to play pretty fast and loose. Like, they play high risk, high reward style.
If there's anything to go by. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas you guys are almost like mathematical in your approach. You know, reduce the probability of error, you know, as much as you can.
Yeah, I think we definitely take that approach to games. And we also, we spend a lot of time going through the motions of specific moments in the game. Like, we spend a lot of time, like, formalizing the first turn or whatever in different matchups. And I don't think a lot of other places do that to the extent that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, though, it's a useful thing. First turn, I think that's where the game is won or lost, generally.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, I think you can have, a lot of times top players will have, like, a middling first turn where there's an advantage gained but the game isn't over, but if the skill difference is big enough, that, like, you can, like, look at a game between a very good player and an okay player and be like, oh, that guy lost, like, two turns ago, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You not rating the British at all in their chances at WTC? I know Beeston is, he's fired up.
Well, I wouldn't be a member of Strictly the Worst if I said that Britain had anything less than a zero chance to win WTC.
You are just making friends everywhere you go, Alex.
I don't know. I mean, to be honest with you, I've played a little bit of British players on Vassal, and I've seen American players play them. But the thing about Britain is that there's so many different players there that who their top players are seems to change fairly regularly. They always have good players. Like, they always have the people floating around at top tables, but who's actually, like, taking tournaments and stuff seems to change. But I don't know, man. I just I would love to be proven wrong. I'm always down to be smashed by someone I talk shit about, but for me, I'm much more interested in, like, the Germans and the Europeans and what they're playing, both because I haven't seen them as much and because when I have seen them, they've been unusual. So,
Yes, we all strive for novel experiences, I suppose.
Yeah, you gotta get, you know, it's just like free basic insulin.
Indeed, indeed. I mean, I know as a person, as a human being, you do suffer from ennui, as do we all, but perhaps, you know, yours is a little more acute.
Oh, shucks. It's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
I just think it explains a lot. Sorry, Kev, I didn't mean to hijack your discussion.
No, it's okay. I
wasn't going
to
go through the different, well, not go through the countries, but ask if there were any other countries, but Alex has kind of covered that. Hasn't Steamforged got their own team, though? Like a non...
Yeah, I think they have three teams, actually. They have one team.
Do they have any employees, or is this the whole, like, Jamie with multiple personality disorder thing?
No, I think they have 9 actual employees, all of which will be playing at WTC.
Right, I'm going to call the Corruption Bureau. I'm not sure that's legit.
I know. The second I roll below average against them, I'm calling a judge over.
Yeah, well, I'm just thinking they're going to drop some kind of, you know, change to the card the night before. Everyone uploads the, you know, the Guild Ball Keeper, and suddenly all the stats are different.
Yeah, they make their attack 12 for just like 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. But the WTC kind of goes, I'm more interested in, you know, what countries are going to do well, whether Micronesia are going to rock up this year, and, you know, see how it kind of falls. And I am very disappointed that Australia doesn't have a team, but. I mean, our meta is pretty small. We make a lot of effort to move around and travel to other places to play. But when we're staring down the barrel of probably mid-20s in terms of our national tournament, it's pretty hard to get, you know, a few guys together that are willing to pay the thousands of dollars to get over there.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's rough, man. I hope that stuff grows. Campbell, if you were like, I mean, we're obviously not at that point yet, but if you were a coach for a WTC team and you just got to choose the guilds, do you know what you would play?
So if I told three people what three guilds they play,
Just given that they're all like approximately the same skill level.
Yeah, I'd definitely put fish in there. I wouldn't have a fish, two fish players, one playing each. You know, I don't think anyone would do
that. That's pretty suspect.
How polarizing or polar opposite that Corsair and Shark are. I probably would go the Alki, mainly because that's my basic wheelhouse. And you know, I completely agree with you that they're the top kind of S tier of teams. And then I'd probably go for something like an Engineers or something different that can build into other teams. A lot of them lately, and I find they've just got a lot of the tools. You know, the double goalkeeper, there's a few janky things you can do to really mess with people, and it just, it stuffs people up, and they don't, you know, you can almost tip the player skill to your advantage purely based on someone not knowing all your models really well. And I found that a few times when I've played certain models against people, like, oh, yeah, I don't know what that does, and then you pull off, like, an alternator controller, you know, and then get a goal off someone or, you know, something they're just not expecting. So I'd like the Engineers if we're talking about, a team that can kind of sculpt their game into any matchup. So that's probably where I'd go.
I think that's totally legit. And the Engineers are an interesting team. They ask a lot of questions of their opponents that not a lot of players, like, know how to answer. I think a good Engineers player can really kind of confuse and frustrate and maybe even put on tilt like a fish player or an alchemist player if they're not ready for the matchup. So I definitely think there's value there playing those guys, just expecting people to not really know how to deal with it.
They've got so many good native abilities that are just on the back of their card. You know, your reanimates, your sturdies, your stoics, all these things people forget. And I've even forgot. I played Tobias the other day and I'm beating Locust into the dirt and they're like, oh, fuck, reanimate. Yeah, well, I didn't obviously have enough influence there, did I? Kind of thing. And even though I've played them, that just those extra little rules they got sitting on the back of the card can really tilt you. Yeah, I find them quite cool to play like that. And Dave,
Dave, do you like anything or anyone?
I do. I like quite a lot of things. My chief love is Blackheart. I think.
Oh, that's pretty reasonable. Blackheart's fun.
I actually think he's the standout kind of Union captain for me. So, you know, if I were taking a slot of WTC, then I'd run Blackheart and just build according to what I was playing into, I think.
That's interesting. I still prefer Vet Rage, but I think, to your credit, and since we're talking computer to computer here, I think you were right, and I overplayed how bad I thought Blackheart was, and I've liked him more now. Vet Rage is still my favorite, but Blackheart has a place, definitely. And I've actually been pretty disappointed by Brisket 3 in the current meta. So,
yeah, she's a little bit too focused and too easy to shut down, I think. Like, with the ball killing coming around as it has, she's become vastly less effective. You know, if she's got a character play which relies on somebody holding a ball as one of her main movement opportunities, then, anybody who's smart is just going to shut it down.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, like, with the captains being released or revealed first now, like, they have four whole slots to tech specifically against Brisket. That's makes you sad.
It does. Yeah, no, I like the fundamentals of Blackheart. I like the 2-inch melee. I like the tank 6. I like the good influence pool that he has, and I love Shadow Like. I just think all of those things by themselves are worthy of consideration. And then you have his crazy movement ability. He's very dynamic.
Definitely. He's got a lot of interesting tricks. I think I had one of my proudest tournament moments recently at the Spring Fling against Jared McGrath, your good friend.
Jared.
He was trying out fish, and in his defense, he wasn't, like, super practiced with fish yet, but I managed to, with Blackheart, stop Shark from scoring for the first time until turn 3. That was, it was like a crowning achievement for me because I fucking hate playing against Shark.
Did you have to sit down to hide your erection or what?
it was cleverly hidden under the table. I think you could actually there's a post of that online. Bill Anderson posted a picture of us, which if you look very closely, my pants are like ripping in the front.
That's amazing. I'm very happy for you. I'm very happy. I'm also a little flabbergasted. You know, I'm going to take that soundbite and upload it everywhere I can. But you know, to be fair, Alex, I'm willing to concede that I was wrong about tiebreaks.
This
is just like
I'm gonna keep that.
Digital pipes that you guys are having. Do you guys want to go get a and I'll just mute you for a bit?
I'm gonna cut the about tiebreaks part, and I'm just gonna keep I was wrong.
Sure, you do that.
Splice it into our theme song for Strictly the Worst.
Indeed. Well, you wouldn't be the first to steal our audio in recent time, so you know, why not just jump on that train?
Yeah, you guys have a beef going with one of those. The single out, right?
We love those dudes. They're friggin' awesome. They're really good dudes. Except for that one dude who just fucking talks all the time.
It's not shut up. It's tangent bang, after bang, tangent. Bang.
What is that about? Is it Tourette? I don't think it's Tourette's, but I think it might be pathological. I don't know.
Some sort of polite British version of Tourette's. I'm sure it exists.
Yeah, yeah. Except it's just like, wow, verbal diarrhea. Whoa! It's crazy. It's like gravy through a fire hose.
Mm. Gross. God. What the hell were we talking about? Oh, WTTT.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, yeah, no, that sounds good. I mean, we're deeply regretful that we can't get there. We'd love to be there. But I guess we're just going to have to settle for somebody else kicking your ass.
I'll fucking fight anybody. I'll tell you what. I'm ready. I'm
so angry. All the time. Just wake up angry. Morning coffee, angry. It's good. I like
it. I'm almost done with my cup, so I'm just about ready to start shouting at you.
Excellent. I guess, I don't know, are we happy to bookend the WCC chat there? Yeah.
I think it's a good opportunity to move it on.
Yeah, well, I guess the other thing we wanted to talk to you about is the Chicago meta.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess we get a secondhand, or, you know, we get a sense of it through your podcast. You know, you guys obviously talk about, you know, your results and how well you're doing and the fact that you like to wage a campaign of colonization across American tournaments.
We've been accused of that, yeah. About a roving band of trophy collectors.
Yes, yeah, you're basically, you know, you're the robber barons of the Guild Ball world. But yeah, no, what's it like from the inside? Like, why the fuck are you guys so arrogant?
Jesus, I don't know. Because we're the greatest, and it's tough to be humble about that. The Chicago meta is a good place to play. I don't know. I think there was just like a perfect storm of a lot of people starting to play it about the same time, who were 100% in on the game competitively. I started playing, I guess, about a year and a half ago in December of 2015. That must be, yeah. And then I think for a little bit I was like pretty demonstrably the best player we had. But then Jordan and Pat started playing, and Vince, who's now on our podcast and also does Run the Length, had picked it up, but then started playing more regularly. And those guys, the three of those guys, all got pretty good pretty quickly. And Jordan, I mean, this is no secret, Jordan started beating me pretty regularly, obviously. And I think we just have a place where everybody is willing to play competitively and play specifically to get better and not be worried about, like, playing awful matchups or something like that. Like, you know, if you want to practice Shark, people here will practice Shark with you, even if they hate playing against Shark, both because they know that it will help them get better against Shark and because they want to help you get good at Shark. And so with an environment like that, and with everybody constantly like talking about the game and contributing their ideas and stuff, even people who are not as successful as Pat or Jordan or I, contributing ideas and constantly trying out new stuff, we have a place set up where it's pretty easy to get better at the game quickly if that's what you want to do.
Sounds like Cobra Kai Dojo.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's great. No, I mean, you know, having a good group of people around you, all of the same mindset, is hugely helpful. No question. So how does that then, I guess, lead you into your assessment about various things? Because if you guys are known for anything, it is your declarative statements about certain teams or certain players within teams. You know, why does it sort of head in that direction? Like, what in the playtesting process leads you to that?
Well, I think it's two things. One is it has been Jordan, who is, at least for a long time, everybody's heard now that he's taken a break from the game. But before he took a break from the game, for like, I don't know, 8-10 months, he was like undeniably our best player and had very strong opinions, obviously, even compared to the rest of us, that were backed up by very quick and sharp mathematical analysis and also a background of chess, which everybody's heard all of this stuff before. It's hard to argue with him, both in the literal sense, it's like physically hard to actually have an argument with him, and then it's also hard to see the game another way when he both explains it very clearly and is smashing you with how he plays. And then I think the other thing is that, like, since all of us have basically the same goal, which is like to be the best, or at least most of us do have the same goal in Guild Ball, which is to like beat everybody we meet at Guild Ball and make it not even look close. There's like when Pat discovers something that really changes how he plays the game, or when Jordan goes on a undefeated streak with X, Y, or Z guild with X, Y, or Z build, it makes us look specifically at that and try to build against that and towards that and understand why it's good. And so I think that that ends up with a pretty unified understanding of the game across all of us. Like there's differences of opinion about like specific models and stuff. Like for instance, Vince really loves playing smoke into masons, and Pat and I, while not experienced alchemist players, don't really think that the Midas into masons matchup is nearly as bad as Vince does. There's still like an understanding that we all want to play the game in basically the same way. And so that leads to a very specific Chicago style, where we like to minimize risk when we can, and we like to have a clear plan, I think, going into a game about like how the matchup should go and how we understand the matchup. And that in turn leads to things like very extreme ball killing and a very slow denial style play for a lot of different guilds. And not everybody likes that. Not everybody likes seeing that in the game, and not everybody likes playing against that or even playing that, even if it works. So I think when we think that something's good and we post it on the internet and then people are like, this is wrong, not because I think that I can play better, but just because it's like morally wrong or not the way the game was meant to be played, which people get a lot, and that's true in any game, it's not just Guild Ball, then I think we get defensive or want to prove that actually our way is like definitely the best way to play the game. And so we kind of double down on those and turn them into the aforementioned declarative statements, like Blackheart is garbage, which is not true, and Pinvice is unplayable, which is not true, and all that other stuff.
Well, the sign of a healthy mind is a willingness to recant. So I guess I'm saying you must be healthy mentally.
Yeah, I think we definitely, like, people are shocked by how strongly we back stuff up, but we also, nobody here is, like, not willing to admit that we're wrong. Like, we change our opinions fairly regularly. When we have an opinion, before, whether or not we know it's going to change eventually, there's no reason to tiptoe around it, to be like, well, I do think it's this, but you could be thinking something else. Because really, everybody should know that. Everybody should know that if, like, Alex Potts says something on Strictly the Worst and you disagree with it, like, that's okay. You're not going to let, you don't have to, like, quit playing Guild Ball because you disagree with me or something. You might be wrong, I might be wrong, but it's, like, I don't know. That's fucking life, I guess.
I find the best thing to do is to jump on Twitter and just, like, roast the shit out of him.
Yeah, the correct response is definitely to just, like, Photoshop me in compromising situations. That's a good way to tell me that Blackheart is actually good, usually. Yeah.
So what's it been like then, where you've gathered this assemblage of head kickers, and you're just like going from tournament to tournament? Like, what do the locals feel? What sort of things do you see on their face when you walk into these places? Is there this overwhelming sense of, fuck me, I've wasted my money?
God, we have gotten that response a few times. There's been a few. I mean, there were. I don't know anybody's name, and so I can't and won't name names. But the Fall Brawl last year, Bill Anderson's event over in Virginia. We decided to go to that, and apparently there were a fair number of people who saw that Jordan was coming and actually dropped from the tournament or decided not to come where they were on the fence. And I mean, like, we just want to play against the best people we can find whenever we can afford it. And I don't think any of us actually want to push people out of tournaments. But there's a certain point where we also don't want to, like, pretend that we're bad or play worse than we could, especially someone like Jordan, who's very all in on winning and, like, just wants to, like, I mean, the roving band of trophy hunters, like, that's like that's an idea that we think is hilarious. Nobody in Chicago wants to, like, push people out of tournaments. And I think we would, as long as we're all serious about this game, we would love if it just kept getting bigger. I think that's, I mean, no question. The bigger it is, the bigger tournaments, even if we start losing tournaments where we'd win against smaller numbers of people, bigger tournaments is always the preferred thing. But the good news is that, like, actually, especially once people get to know us in person a little bit, I think that there's a lot of positive response to us showing up at tournaments, too. Like, I've had people say that they're really excited about getting the chance to play against good players that are not from their local meta. And you can't hang out with everybody at a big tournament, obviously, but we do our best to, like, talk to people about the game or about whatever and be open to, like, talking through the game after the fact, whether we win or lose, like, critiquing each other's play if that's something that our opponent is interested in. And then we also have people like Jared McGraw, who's, like, our favorite person, because that guy is so pleasant to play with, and he just wants to win and to beat the better guy every single time. And I love that. Like, that's, like, the perfect attitude to be. And when that game that I mentioned, the Shark, the game where he was playing Shark and I was playing Blackheart, it was like a slog of a game. It took forever. He was struggling the whole time to get to the ball. He managed to get two goals anyway because it's Shark. And I ended up winning. And it just felt like a nightmare from his perspective to me. It felt like this must have been the most frustrating game, just, like, chasing the ball around for so long. And as soon as the clock was down and I got to 12 points, he, like, shook hands. He had this huge smile on his face. And he's like, that was one of the best games I've played in a while. Thanks, man. And I just, like, I don't know. That's the dream, is to get opponents like that every day, whether they win or lose, to just be all in on the competitive thing and feel great about playing your best game as soon as the game's over.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Alex. I think it ties in nicely to what you were saying before. Maybe some of the stuff that's popped up on the forums about, you know, scoring being too strong or ball killing being too strong. Really, I think it comes back to this competitive mindset where, you know, if you are committed to working out, I guess, these meta problems with the game, then you basically just push your way through these things, which are actually kind of temporary situations. You know,
yeah, they definitely can be, yeah.
So you basically get to a mindset where it doesn't matter what the challenge is, doesn't matter what the matchup is, you're just there to play, do your best, leave it all on the table. Do you encounter that a lot when you're sort of traveling from tournament to tournament? In general, do you find other metas just don't approach the game with the same mentality?
I think not to the extent that we do. In Chicago, we're pretty mercenary about what factions we play. There's a few exceptions. Vince pretty much only plays Alchemist competitively right now, but I think even him, if Alchemist ended up being in a bad spot in the meta or got nerfed or something like that, I think he would be willing to switch. And, like, most of us are willing to switch guilds when we either get frustrated with the guild we're playing or don't think they're good anymore. I think that's a strength of Guild Ball too. Everybody talks about that you can own multiple guilds and it's fairly cheap. It's not like War Machine where if the meta swings one way and you're like $1,000 into Scorn or whatever the fuck, and you're just like, well, cool, I'm screwed now. All of my tournament matches are going to be miserable. It doesn't have to be that way with Guild Ball. And if you're competitive,
sometimes with War Machine you lose before you even start. You lose at army selection, right?
Yeah. And that doesn't happen at Guild Ball. And also you can mitigate that because army selection is a lot easier. Like, it's $100 or $200 instead of $1,000 to get it fully into a guild.
Seriously, I'm selling a whole bunch of trolls.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't played War Machine in a while. There's still people playing War Machine in Chicago, but I think it's doing pretty okay around here, but, I don't know. I picked up Guild Ball and basically never looked back. But anyway, not a lot of people will I think people do get frustrated with the meta because they're not willing to do that switch. Obviously it is money. Not everybody has $200 to just drop on a game when the meta goes south for a few months or something like that. And I get that, and that's totally reasonable. But I think that there's something to be said for, like, getting your buddies together and just, like, trading guilds and stuff. Because when we go to tournaments, we'll let each other use whatever models we want. Like, if I get to the tournament and I'm just like, ah, fuck, I really want to try out fish, and I don't have fish. Hey, Pat, can I borrow your fish? That's, like, no problem. Like, no question. And then, like, the 10 minutes before the tournament, we'll be talking about fish builds and fish strats and stuff. And so even though we try to beat the shit out of each other whenever we're on the pitch, we're also really supportive of each other in terms of our, like, competitive whims or trying to get better and stuff. And so making sure that everybody's playing their best game, both against people that aren't from Chicago and against each other, once we actually get on the table, I think helps a lot too, and makes it easier to, like, test stuff out. Like, I think maybe that's the thing that people get wrong the most when they talk about the Chicago guys, is that we, like, just have this way that we want to do stuff and we ignore the rest of the game. That's definitely not true. We try as much as we can. It's just we tend to settle on certain things after testing everything.
So why not hunters? I mean, I know the conversation got caught up around maybe some of the example play play document that was put out. But I get the impression that you have absolutely no compunction to go in there and do the testing. And, you know,
that's not 100% true. I mean, like, so first of all, a few of us, not everybody in the Chicago meta, but a few of us were playtesters running into Season 3. Mm-hmm. It's not like secret or NDA knowledge anymore, because we're in the fucking book. Like, in the Season 3 credits, you can see our names. And we're not anymore. But we played hunters fairly regularly in the playtesting. And we have played hunters occasionally since then. All of us have, like, tried about once or twice, I think. So it's not like we just, like, ignored the faction and literally put it in a trash can or anything. The baseline is, across the board, basically all of their players, they pay too much to do what other guilds basically do for free. And their one unique thing, like, they're really, if we're not being assholes about it, they do have one unique thing, and it's that they have, like, an overwhelming amount of denial tactics. Like, they have things like the forest and things like pinned and traps and stuff like that. They have ways to slow down an opponent to get to do whatever the opponent wants to do, right? And I think that's meant to be their plan. They're meant to be, like, a control denial faction with, like, a bunch of glass cannons that will destroy people once they're worn down from afar or whatever. But I don't think that plan is very good, because it makes you really resource inefficient with influence and momentum. And then I don't think the hunters are particularly good at it either. I think that the hunters lose very slowly, but they do lose. They don't actually have, like, plans to get to 12 points. They just have plans to make it hard to get to 12 points for the opponent. And I think that's basically true across the board. Like, there's just these players that, at their best, just do pretty good compared to the best guilds. And then they have to pay so much for it. And then they're also a low-resource team. They're always sitting around at, like, 11 influence or something, and you can actually make them do 10 influence, which is just an awful nightmare. It just, they need better resource control, they need more efficient stuff going on, and they need things that aren't so reliant on, like, very specific and complicated activation orders where any one die roll can just completely blow up in your face. Like, I mean, I'm sure you guys have played Hunters. Have you ever missed pinned and then not felt like you wanted to kill yourself?
Yeah, though I think the same can apply to Ballista. Like, the same issues apply
to actually
those with ranged first turn plays.
Sure, that's true, but I think that Ballista has a lot of other strengths that Theron doesn't. And, like, Ballista's actually, like, a kind of a beast in melee now. Like,
yeah, he's good when they close. I mean, after Season 3 Hunters dropped, the new lot dropped, I played 30 games straight with a mix of Skartha and Theron. Theron needs some work, but I think Skartha's actually not bad. I think she's viable.
I definitely think that she's better than Theron. I don't think there's any question about that.
No, but I mean, like, viable in terms of not S tier, but certainly, like, well in the middle of the spread of guilds. because she's got great goal potential. I mean, they can score two goals, no worries. And they have some great burst damage potential as well. But it is a hard game. I totally agree about the complicated activation orders. And you've got to be very careful.
I guess I just think that you probably can win this game, though, and I'm sure you have. It just feels to me that if you, whatever skills you were taking to do that, whatever, however you played and however you thought about the game and stuff, I think you could apply those to better guilds, to almost any other guild in the game, and be more successful quicker. Like, that's what I think. I don't think I take
Hunters on Clock is the point that I got to. But
yeah.
I think with enough practice, you could probably get to the point where somebody probably better than me does quite well with them.
Well, I mean, I don't want to say that Hunters are, like, literally unplayable or unwinnable with, but I think that you're putting yourself at the biggest disadvantage you can when you pick Hunters over any other guild in competitive. I don't know. And I would love to be proven wrong. I'm always down to, like, CSK the game that just totally blows my mind or something, but I haven't seen that yet, and people have tried around her.
Timmy's on it. Timmy's on it.
Yeah, I mean, if I would be over the moon if I got to see Timmy play Hunters at WTC, that would be hilarious, and I would be like trying to win my game faster so I could go watch his game for sure.
Well, I hear he's setting up a seminar on the side, so just get in there. You know, you can learn at the foot of the master. apparently, the seminar cost gives you a bottle of vodka as well, so it's included as part of the price. That vodka is a prerequisite to learning.
Okay. This is an unorthodox method, but I'm willing to believe it because it's Tim.
Yeah. He's a pharmacist, would you believe? A pharmacist.
Yeah, I got the impression after that, that picture that he took of all of his hangover fixes.
Looked like he raided the back of an ambulance.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to play against him. I'm really hoping we get some games in WTC, even if we don't get matched up, because I want to see this shit, this Pinvice, this Hunters, all of this crap.
Have you played much Pinvice at all?
You mean played as or against?
As Pinvice.
No, I played a little bit of Engineers every so often, but I almost always play just Ballista. He's more my style. But I don't think that Pinvice is completely awful. It's just they need to fix the thing where when she gets tooled up, she does more damage to herself. That's so dumb.
No, I love the way that Tim's just thought his way around that, and he just kills her deliberately to come back on for ball position.
That's definitely what you have to do. Like, the plan has to be, okay, this person is going to commit suicide to score a goal and then come back on and hopefully do it again. Like, I see that there's a plan there. I just sort of wish that she didn't have to do that.
Yeah, I think ideally with her, like, I've played a lot of her lately, ideally you want to go, you know, set up a 6-point scenario with her where you
for get, sure.
Yeah, and you're only then giving up the 2 points of her, and then you play another kind of couple of turns where you grind out, set up the next 6-point scenario. I think that's how you kind of want to play.
Yeah, I definitely think there's a path to victory there, but it feels like, I mean, it feels like that's something that will surprise a player once, and then the next time that player plays against Pinvice, they're going to spend their whole first 2 turns getting ready for a 6-point activation so that it can't happen. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like something that's preventable. It's definitely strong, and if you don't prevent it well enough, if you're like 1 inch off of stopping Pinvice from doing that, then you're fucked. But it feels like there's room to respond because she needs so much setup and stuff, so.
I think, that definitely falls in the meta differences, because I think over here, I mean, we've got Tobias, who's a gun engineers player, and yeah, she just, you watch him, like, just kill people, like, straight button, and you think there's nothing wrong with her, but that could be a player skill thing, or whether he's just got to that higher level of understanding in terms of how they synergize together.
Sure, yeah. I know you've
spoken of her legendary play in the past, and I think you've applied the same sort of thinking to Blackheart as well, in that you're not necessarily a fan of the passing game because of the risk involved.
Yeah, and also the engineers are better at it than Union in almost every case, just because they have much more consistent kicks. All those 4-6 kicks make Pinvice a lot better, and that's also why I don't like Skatha. That's like why I'm dubious about Skatha, is I really hate that her character play, her snowball thing, but in order to get her really good movement for either herself or her team, there's all these requirements. Like, not only do you have to hit the goal, or the pass. Mm-hmm. Jesus, I'm still waking up, clearly. Hit the pass, but it's... which is reliant on dice, and that can miss, and sometimes there's modifiers, like you're down a die, or the TN goes up, or whatever. But it also means she has to be within six of someone, which is not impossible, but not always trivial when Skatha's, like, running around doing these crazy goal runs or whatever. So I think Pinvice is better at that plan, too. But I still... It's so tough to be like, okay, all I have to do to do this huge activation is do this pass twice. And then, but the problem is, if either of those passes miss, I get literally nothing. My influence is just sitting there, and I'm not touching anybody. That's a really bad feel for me. And I don't like relying on that for games. I'd rather that be something where it's like I'm already ahead, so I'm willing to take these risks to... I'm really taking these risks to extend my lead to, like, an insurmountable sum. Like, go from 6-0 to 10-0 or whatever. And so that's why I think Blackheart is good, is because Blackheart has the tools to get to 6-0 without doing all the passing shenanigans. And then you can do all the on-my-mark crap to extend your lead once you're in a position where if on-my-mark fucks up, you haven't just completely lost the game.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, there are ways to mitigate. Like, with Pinvice's legendary... You know, I find this is just the way I play it. You always do the passing first. You leave your running or whatever till last, and that way
sure.
The ability to mop up. And then the order in which you kick to your models, you either make sure that your distance to them is short, such that your scatter's going to go over their base, or that there's free space on the other side where you can then do your sprint and then work off that for getting the last.
For sure.
So I still appreciate you, and I did it the other day against David in a game where I missed the first one, and then it basically screwed the way it was going to roll out. I definitely could have got a goal, chose not to, but it was, yeah, heavily dice reliant.
Yeah, and I mean, there's always room for optimization for sure, but it's the same thing you mentioned, Dave, you mentioned Ballista and how Ballista has the problem with like missing character plays too. It's... Whether it's Pinvice doing passes or Ballista with character plays or whatever, it's all about having preparation for both when it works and when it doesn't. Mm. Like, you need to be able to... need to have a good decision lined up when you miss the knockback bolt, whatever it's called. And you need a good decision lined up when Pinvice misses her legendary stuff. And I guess my problem then with people like Pinvice and Skatha is that, well, I think Ballista does have good choices when he misses his dicey plays... I don't think that Skatha and Pinvice have as many good choices when their big pass play fucks up, is, I think, my issue with them.
Yeah, I mean, it does leave you sort of flapping in the wind, I guess.
Hmm.
I mean, I can attest to that. I missed Skatha Snowballs 3 games in a row as my kind of opening
play. Oh, God.
So, you know, like launching J-Car or launching the Bear. And, I mean, that was 3 examples where it came home, you know, really, really hard for me.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to, like, fucking leave the game. Jesus, that sounds awful.
It was rough, but, you know, by converse, I think, in converse, I had 27 games where that shit came off. And
that's fair.
I don't know that the outliers are necessarily a good... I don't know, I tend to be more positive than negative. I'm like, all right, the upside here is so good that it's worth taking that, you know, what is it, 93% chance.
Yeah.
Yeah, or the 7% chance of failure. Because you get this crazy movement with Skatha in particular, you get this crazy movement. You're just threading the whole board at that point.
Sure, she does go really far, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know, swings and roundabout. But I think I'm listening to you talk, and I'm thinking there is something fundamental about, I guess, the Chicago style of play in all of this, in that if you are minimizing risk, how then do you roll out a game to do so? So, in terms of, I guess, a crazy opening play like Skatha and her snowball and flinging things up the pitch... as something that you wouldn't want to necessarily do, what does the Chicago style then revert to? What does it look like in terms of opening plays and consistency?
Well, compared to Skatha, it looks like Shark. Like, there's... Shark is a pretty reliable motherfucker. I mean, I've been playing a lot of Fish lately. I wanted a change of pace from Union, and I wanted to learn how to properly play a scoring team. And so... I think, like, Shark kicking off against a beating team that doesn't have super long threat ranges, like, I don't know, Farmers or Brewers or Masons, that's a play that I will put money on all the time. Because there's such a... With 6 influence, Shark is threading so much of the board. He's doing it so reliably. He doesn't have to roll any dice until he gets to the opponent, right? And then when he's rolling the dice, he can push the dice in his favor by getting a gutton string, which is fairly likely against most targets, especially on a charge, and then turning the gutton string into a bunch of dodges off of them because they're now 2-1 or 3-1 defense, and then taking the ball off of them and scoring with his 4-die kick that can become a 5-die if you bonus time, and he has enough dodges that sometimes he gets into tap-in with that. Like, that's just... So that's a play that, as the Shark player, you don't have to think about, like, how to mitigate when it goes wrong. Or at least it's a lot less likely to go wrong because you have so many retries. Like, let's say you charge in, then you have 4 influence left. So in the next 3 influence, all you got to do is generate 1 momentum and tackle the ball, even if your charge completely whiffed. Like, that's still, like, a total disaster. You still have 3 attacks and to tackle the ball and generate 1 momentum. And then that puts the onus on the other player to be making decisions to respond to you. And that's the better feeling, I think, because then they have the chance to fuck up. And all you have to do is to sit there and watch what they're doing and try to figure out what they're doing and see if you can make Shark go the distance, even if they set up something special, whether it's like counter charges or a very extreme deployment in a corner of the map or something like that. And so it's... like, working towards giving the opponent as many chances to fuck up as possible is, I think, the fundamental, like, way to play that we focus on, I guess. Like, just offering them opportunities to be worse players. and, like, an example of that is that Vince, our Alchemist player in our podcast guy, at the Spring Fling, he was, like, surprising people by just fucking straight up killing the ball with Alchemists. Like, you know, they're Alchemists. They're, like, a mixed team who has absurdly good scorers. And he would like, get an Alchemist mirror match, and he would just, like, no question, no hesitation, just straight up put the ball in the corner and be like, come fight me. And that's just because we're all ready to make that decision where it's like, all right, come be a better player than me, I dare you. You know, not letting the ball can swing the game so much, whereas a fighting, like a big scrum in the field over multiple turns is more about a lot of micro decisions and a lot of optimization. And so a player with a more concrete and sharp understanding of the game should be able to extend their lead over the course of that without worrying about sudden bursts of 4 or 8 or 12 points that the ball can give you. And the ball can also go wrong, but you never want to bank on your opponent just rolling bad dice. It's a bad strategy if the strategy is to wait for your opponent to roll bad dice, right? I mean, I think anybody can agree to that. Mm. So just, and it's not like we kill the ball every game, but I think in most cases what we do, we're ready to look at a matchup and be like, I would rather the ball not be played, so I just want to fight you, so I'm going to put the ball in the corner as soon as I can. And I think it's a little bit of the Chicago arrogance that we're just like willing to go anywhere in the U.S. and at least challenge people to a good game, even if we're not 100% going to win. And it's also faith in our understanding of the game being concrete enough that we can carry ourselves to victory even over good or bad dice.
It's something that you guys have been playing at for at least 2 seasons now as well. I mean, you see a lot of Jordan's game on stream where the same tactic is played out, basically. You know, I mean, we interviewed him back last year after he won
Nationals. Gen Con, Gen Con.
And it was the same thing, you know, the fact that I think at the time he was saying the scoring game has a greater opportunity to fail, the ball is too useful a resource to let go of easily, and it seems that that philosophy has really kind of taken root in the way that you guys play.
I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say whether it's subjective when you're a part of it. Like, I do believe that that's correct, right? And I don't know... I believe that pretty firmly about the game. At least the current game state. Obviously, these things can change, because Steamforge can always change the rules. But as the game currently stands, and as it stood in Season 2, I think that the way that the dice are set up for scoring versus takeouts, I think that scoring has a better chance to fail catastrophically, because dice can also go wrong in a fighting situation, but it's usually, even when they go completely awful for one roll, that doesn't, like, completely ruin your game plan most of the time. Sometimes it will. But I do think it's actually intrinsic to the game, to Guild Ball itself, because there's a lack in the game of any requirement to, like, move forward, to, like, go towards the center of the pitch or go towards your opponent, unless your opponent is demanding, is keeping resources away from you. And the two resources in the game that you can really deny your opponent are momentum and the ball. because they get their influence no matter what, right? I think the idea that the takeout game is more reliable and a better way to win if you're positive that you're the better player or even think you might be the better player comes from the idea that if you deny people resources that they have to then come to you and get from you, then you're deciding what they're doing and not the other way around. And when you're deciding what they're doing, it becomes a more predictable game. And when it's a more predictable game, it means you understand the game better. And when you understand the game better, you should be able to make better decisions than your opponent. And so it would be different if there was something like in War Machine, there's the scenarios where playing defensively can really screw you because your opponent takes control of the map and they win through that, right? There isn't something like that in Guild Ball. There's nothing that could be gained from just holding the center of the pitch intrinsically. If you hold the center of the pitch but you're not in threat range of your opponent, you're not any closer to 12 points than you were when you were at your deployment line, or you're a minuscule amount, I guess. I don't know. Sorry, I'm throwing out a lot of silly concepts. I hope that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. I mean, and you can sort of see how the killing style game, accompanied with, I guess, ball denial, means that you can gradually build an incremental advantage to the point that, you know, when you want to go and score, and in the event that you miss, you don't really lose anything because you're ahead in terms of tempo anyway.
Exactly, yeah. If you're up 8 points and then you try to score and you miss, but they're still at, like, 4 points, then you're not weeping on the ground or anything, right? You didn't just throw away the game. But if you're both on 8 points and you go for a goal and you miss, and then the ball is like in control of vitriol against you or all of a sudden or something, then you're like, well, I just threw the game away. And I was in the game until that moment. But so yeah. I think the other thing, and this is a problem with Guild Ball's design right now that I don't know exactly how to fix, but there's so many because they made goal scorers so good in Guild Ball, in Season 3 particularly, it's really hard to make a decision where you bring the ball into play in the center of the field. Because think about how many models in every guild can score from the center of the field if they just are given the ball in one activation. It's a ton. It's basically everybody who's labeled a striker in the game, and then it's a bunch of people who aren't labeled strikers too. And for some of them, it's like not even... Like, you don't even have to think about it. Like, Midas or Shark or Brisket 3, if they have the ball and they're in the center of the pitch, that's a goal. Like, it's just not really even a question, except for the dice. So the 2-2 game, where you want to, like, play with the ball, have it in the center of the field, have your guys spread out and passing it around before you go for a sweet goal, and then you opportunistically take takeouts when they present themselves while your opponent tries to scramble and get the goal, I think that's the dream. I don't follow a lot of soccer, but... That's like what the game looks like when you look at competitive soccer, right? It's people spread out so that you can pass the ball around and be agile and flexible and stuff like that. I don't think Guild Ball is right now designed in a way that promotes that, because there's too many one activation goals that people don't really have to think about. And when that's there, the reasonable response, unless you're already ahead on points by a lot, is to just never give them that option for the single activation goal.
Yeah, I think that's right. We see a lot of Shark and Alchemist mm-hmm. in our meta, and I think the only rational response, and I think this is something that came up after Mobile put out their cast, the only rational response is to kill and then get ahead to the point where it's viable to put the ball back into the game. I mean, I can't see any other logical conclusion.
Yeah, it's really tough to. And for anybody listening who hasn't gotten to this point yet, if you're seeing a lot of Midas and Shark and it's really ruining your day, just play Corsair or Ballista. I mean, those guys are the meta breakers right now, in my opinion, for sure. They have a lot of tools to kill the ball and still fight, and then be flexible enough that the ball can then come and go into the goal. And also, Corsair, man, I think Corsair's legendary is so great. I just use it for the close control aura. I don't even use it for the kicking most of the time.
Yeah.
So I can tell you where Chicago's at right now.
Yeah, this is why people fight you on Twitter, Alex.
Oh, I know why people fight me on Twitter. Mm. I just don't know why I'm on Twitter.
Not at this late stage. It's a mystery. Sorry, Cam, you were going to say something.
No, I have no idea what I was saying. It's fine.
Probably cussing me out for abusing Corsair that way.
No, his legendary, that's what I was going to say. The with his legendary, you don't really need to use it. Like, it's not like with Shark where you need to score the goals. Like, even though the threat extension on the kicking, his legendary is kind of, you're always going to get one goal with him anyway, and he's generally already beat three people to death at that point. So,
yeah, exactly. I mean, occasionally I do benefit from the extra kick range. You know, it makes Corsair's own threat on the goal a little bit better, which is good. But a lot of times I'll use it, like, with no intention to kick the ball for that entire turn. I just want my entire team to have close control in case I get the ball.
Yeah. Close control. I love the NG's team that you can put together with all the close control on it. It's just so annoying.
Yeah, definitely. And even if you don't go full close control, like, Ballista and Colossus have so many, like, denial tactics and, like, good knockdowns and stuff like that, that it can be, for anybody but Shark probably, and maybe even Shark, it can be a real pain in the ass to get to the ball for the other team. And then of course, Ballista has, like, the ultimate legendary for the four takeouts and then one goal game plan, because you get the four takeouts and then you don't even have to get, like, close to their goal. You just hit the breach and kick for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you could spend all your influence and still get to have a shot. It's fantastic.
Yeah, that shit is so sick. Ballista is really, really fun to play.
I think I've missed every time I've shot with breach too.
Oh no!
Everybody, yeah, it's that's probably why I play so much pin voice.
Yeah.
No, that's very interesting. Very illuminating. It's a journey into the dark labyrinth that is the Chicago meta. That's fantastic.
Yeah, the depraved mind of a ball killer.
Indeed. So my wife loves this thing called Serial Killer Sunday, where on Sunday night they just run a whole bunch of, like, true crime shows about serial killers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel it's kind of an appropriate analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that's very similar to our weekly game days.
Mm. Do you have any sort of closing thoughts for us, Alex? Any sort of, valuable insight that the listeners can take away until they get to hear your dulcet tones on your own podcast?
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm recording some valuable insight later today. I don't want to blow my load too early.
Well, I mean, that is how you came to be known as the Deep Dish Diggler, though.
Oh, come on, it's not just that. There's a lot more to it.
premature ejaculation runs the gamut.
No, I don't know. Just, I guess, I was going to say don't take me too seriously, but if anything, I would actually prefer if people took me more seriously on Twitter.
And the forums, and the forums.
Yeah.
Social media generally.
people love my giant paragraphs on the forums. You can't take that away from me.
Regular fucking Tolstoy, mate.
I get really fucking bored at work. No, I don't know. Keep everybody who's worried about the state of the game, I think, I don't know. I don't like chastising people for complaining, so I'm not going to do that. But I do think that if you're unhappy with the state of the game, just try a guild that's totally different from what you're playing right now, because at the very least, it will give you a different perspective on how the metagame's going. And I think that can be good for anyone, pretty much. And don't think that just because one person plays an extreme style, that's the best style. Because if you get caught up in someone else's game plan, then you'll never win. And if you let the Chicago guys dictate how the metagame is played, you won't have any fun either.
Yeah, those guys are dicks.
Yeah, they suck.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Thank you for having me on the cast.
No, that was excellent, Alex. That was very insightful. And we appreciate your good humor and this opportunity to mend fences. I think it's important.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we don't want people to put up a turf war for us, especially since I can't fight you in person at the WTC this year.
Very good. Well, Alex, thank you for your time. It's been a surprising pleasure.
That's what they call me when they don't call me the Diggler.
Cheers, Alex.
See ya.
Cobble.
Jeez, it's a bit fucking dark, isn't it?
It is dark.
Is it the shortest day of the year?
It was yesterday.
Yesterday. Fuck. That would explain lots.
Indeed.
How are you?
Well. I'm nice. I've had a busy day.
This is also good.
This is a special edition of Carball.
It is. Commonly referred to as
Carball Slugfuck.
Slugfuck. where we see two invertebrates majestically fuck each other, basically.
Indeed.
Yes, nice.
Indeed.
I like it. So after our chat yesterday, we thought we'd give the option of the interviewee to tell us a matchup to play. So we're going to play said matchup of Ox versus Shark. And I'll actually switch positions. So usually I play a lot of fish and you play butchers, but I'm going to play some butchers tonight and see how fucking bad Ox is.
Indeed. My only question is, who in this matchup is the power top and who is the bottom?
Ooh,
it's very confusing. Sure.
Yeah,
very confusing.
Yeah. And at what point does one, you know, slug finish and the next one start?
Indeed.
In this embrace.
And given the gelatinous nature of slugs, is there a top or a bottom? We know there is, sort of, but...
Yeah, I can tell by that that you've actually been Googling slugs having sex today.
Indeed, yeah. And then I Googled myself a little. Hey, there's Lemon, can I Google myself?
It actually reminded me of a school party, but anyway, we won't get into
that. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah, I couldn't tell where two people, you know, started.
Began or ended.
Yeah.
Nice. Well, so Ox versus Shark.
Yeah, it should be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the argument for Ox. I can see the argument because he has the capacity to do a lot of damage in a very short period.
And
that theoretically should, you know, counteract Shark's ability to score a lot of goals in a very short period.
I think the game's going to be over pretty quick.
Yeah, thank fuck.
It heralds back to season one, actually, because it's, you know, two of the original kind of guilds. So it's actually pretty interesting. I'll probably throw in some of the newer players. I reckon, I think Vet Brisket might get a Guernsey.
Ooh, good choice.
Yeah, well, I like the, was it Quick Time or whatever it is? The extra 2 inches, I reckon, will be pretty handy. Because I see Oxes, you know, getting bogged down or whatever, so that's kind of a useful tool. And also, when I was doing the build, they're pretty influenced staff, so if you can get the goal with her and, you know, go up by 2 influence, that's massive for them.
Yeah. I like the idea of being able to bounce Ox 2 inches to put his aura in a better spot if he gets moved around.
Nice.
That seems like a good application. But
nice.
Yeah, I don't know, Vet Brisket, you know, she's no slouch.
No, I really like her. I mean, I was looking at them both today, and obviously normal brisket's fucking nuts as well. I don't know, I found I was in a situation as I was trying to build a list that it was, especially against fish that aren't traditionally beaty, and because I know it's shark, it's not corsair, that some of the buffs, it's a bit win more. Like, it's a bit, like, how many damage buffs do you actually need? And I don't think you need them all.
No. Though if you can, you know, if you can whip them out at the right time.
Yeah.
Get 2 takeouts in a turn and, you know, that's probably the way that you probably get back to parity with fish in that bullshit scoring game.
Yes. Well, that's if you can move at that point, I think.
Indeed. That's a big problem.
There will be one of those fun terms where you do fuck all, I do fuck all. And unlike Alkies, you don't have as many kind of ranged plays to mess with them. That will be gross.
Yeah, so what's your lineup look like?
Probably. Ox, Princess, Vet Brisket, Boiler, because I just like the Princess Boiler combo. And also, Boiler's got a, well, they've all got nice low momentous tackles, but I reckon Boiler's with Mark Target can get a bit of range.
Yep.
And then Boar, probably, because I need a bit more 2-inch melee. And that's one of those win more where I think Boar's that mop-up model that can come in and just obliterate someone.
Yeah.
And with the Vet Brisket dodge, just enables Boar, because I think Boar is obviously innately slow. And Boiler,
the Boiler Mark Target. Yeah.
So I think that puts a pretty big kind of threat range on him. And then I was eyeing off a Tenderizer to try to counter the goal. I know that's not... I'm new at butchers, so I may be doing it wrong, but that was my thought.
Yeah, though I think your point about too many damage buffs equating to win more. I mean, normally you take Meat Hook in that slot, but Tendy does seem like a good option.
I just thought 1-inch melee on Meat Hook isn't fantastic. You do give up all the debuffs and the tooled up and all the fun stuff. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, Ox plus Legendary plus Butchery plus Aura... You know, there's 3 damage buffs on him alone, right?
Yep.
I can't see the fish killing him.
And if they are trying to, it's going to take them a bit of work. So I think you've got a bit of the damage buff there. Boiler's got the princess kind of gang up bonus as well. So, yeah, that's kind of how I... And I figure it's going to be quick scoring anyway, so...
Well, my aim is to get this game over as quickly as I can so I can move on to playing something
you're
actually.
Not, yeah, you're not a fan of Shark, are you?
No. It's about to launch into some articulate kind of defense there, but it's just like, I don't
like him. Yeah, there's something about him. He is the definitive fuckboy.
Yeah, I mean, he does one thing really well.
Yeah.
Like, really well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, easily the best strike in the game. And we all know that. He is a pretty good, you know, it's, I know I basically am going to be facing that 8-0, you know, the, or the 8-point from you scenario, and it just becomes a speed game at that point. Yeah. So your decisions have to be quite good and quite efficient.
But I think what it really, you know, Shark is great at scoring and then getting that legendary. But Siren is probably, this is where it gets egregious. And we're not the first people to, I think anybody who's played against Shark or played Shark knows that this is kind of disgusting.
Mm. Well, yeah, the fact that your best ways to kind of, or your best defenses against them, you know, they've got the two ways of stealing it from you. So if you keep it on you, then Siren gets it. If you try to just leave it loose, you know, Shark gets it.
And then you've got Grayscale sort of floating around.
Yeah.
You've got Sakana floating around. You've got the Otter floating around.
And they're all fucking super fast.
Yeah.
I mean, I like it from a fish point of view, but I think, yeah, it does kind of tip the scale.
So I think in terms of something interesting about it, that conversation with Alex was pretty heavy on scoring and ball killing as parts of the meta as it stands. I think, if anything, this matchup is probably a good example of both of those styles of play put into application.
Yeah.
I don't know that you can afford to release the ball until you've got 8 points.
No, no. I think you could cheekily do it at 6. Depends on what you're on. I mean, I've got a few ball-killing strategies. One of the recent ones that I think I've seen on a forum, or where you chuck it on your mascot, right? Mascot has a low kick. If you've got a high def mascot, even better. So Nudge is probably one of the best if you're just going to sit it like an anti-Siren kind of tech.
Yep.
What you can then do is put one or two models in front. You know, obviously you don't want to hamstring your gameplay, so this is, you know, situational. Then if they try to take a kick or, you know, just free up the ball, if it scatters over those models, you can actually snap it. So it's a good way of kind of trying to negate the Siren kick. Nudge is obviously the best at it. Princess isn't fantastic, but Princess isn't slow either. So if I need to, I can just dump the ball and run it. And, you know, Siren's, if I do it the opposite direction to Shark to Siren's side, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Obviously, Brisket's got great tech against one-inch melee. Mm-hmm. Against Fish, no.
Not so much.
Charmed Mail's pretty good, but, you know, 5-1, that's not bad.
Yeah, it's good. But I think, yeah, like you say, you're really taking her for the dodge and for the potential to get to, what, like, +2 influence on turn 2?
Yeah, I think you want that. I mean, it's basically an 11 influence side, and this is the one thing that Tenderizer, I've only just realised because I don't play, like I said, Butchers that much, is that he only brings one. And so he doesn't contribute heaps to the pool, and that might be another reason why you don't see him as much as you see your compounds and that, because he's got the two great goalkeeping abilities.
Yep.
But he's bringing less to the party.
Indeed.
So I do like having a certain amount of passive models, though, on the pitch.
Yep. Well, I mean, that's another good point. Sorry, going back to Brisket. I guess the circumstances in which you might go for a goal early is if Brisket gets the ball. You receive, Brisket gets the ball, and, you know, she shoots that first 4 points. And I think that plays into your tempo game anyway.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. I mean, you always want that first one against the Fish.
Yeah.
But it's... Yeah.
But Shark's kicking off.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to try to strip the ball off you. And I think that's where Tenderizer is quite big. You know, the counter charge, the +1 target number, all wrapped up in one model, is pretty handy.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of willing to sacrifice the one influence for that.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're so momentum efficient anyway, as Butchers.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can probably afford it to some extent.
I love all the... And this is another thing I've only just realised. All the momentous tackles.
Yeah.
And obviously, coming from scoring sides, you know, it's not great for them to have a heap of them. So they don't. But when you go to Butchers and it's like, oh, fuck, like Boiler, Momentous Tackle on the two.
Yep.
I think Princess has got, you know, an early one as well, and like it's just nuts.
Phillip's got a low one.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So I think that'll be interesting. Probably reining back my scoring style of game, it's going to be hard because that's just naturally how I like to play. So I think that'll be, you know, potentially part of where it's won and lost if I don't kill it well enough for long enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I was thinking about whether I take a fish lineup that kind of tends towards a beat style a bit more. So I think at the moment I'll probably play Shark, Salt, Siren, Original Siren, Grayscales, Sakana.
Yeah.
And, yeah, then I'm not really sure as to who I'll play in that last slot. Kraken seems okay.
Kraken seems an interesting one because he'll hold up, beat face, but I don't know. Yeah, how much do you need that? I mean, you could always go the full tote football, go Angel, but then she just dies.
Yeah. See, I feel like Angel is a win more model.
Yeah, she is.
Whereas if you've got Kraken, I suppose you can... I don't know, maybe Gutter.
Gutter, I think, could be... Because Gutter's a better tank, I would say, than Kraken is.
Yeah.
You know, and similar toolbox, and momentous damage instead of normal momentous.
I do wonder whether she'd just evaporate into Butchers, though.
Yeah, I'll try.
Yeah.
I'll try.
I don't know.
I think Kraken would evaporate too, though.
Yeah, well, anything's going to...
Yeah, I hope so. Actually, I'm looking forward to it, you know, playing the opposite side of it. You know, testing out the skills the other way around. Especially with the ball killing being the hot topic at the moment, trying out a few of those kind of tactics.
Well, I think it's important to become what you hate on occasion.
And that's exactly what you're doing.
Yes, so much hate. Yeah, so if you manage to get a second game, what are you going to play?
Smoke. I'm practicing a bit of smoke action. I want to try some full tote condition game. I wouldn't mind playing into Corsair. I know there are a couple of fish players. Like, we've always got fish players up here. So, wouldn't mind playing that, although I don't think Ellie's there tonight. The Crows are playing. Thursday night game. Fantastic. Footy.
Who are they playing?
Hawks. Could be an interesting game of football.
Man, they started so well.
Yeah.
Their season just tanked.
They're doing all right. Well, they're still top or second. They're still doing all right, but they're just losing games they shouldn't lose.
Yeah,
so a bit of smoke action. What about yourself? What are you try a bit of training or just seeing what other people want to?
I don't know. I might fuck around with brisket, seasoned brisket. Nice. Play a bit of her. I know she's got some bad counterplay against, I guess, ball killing sides, but she's still pretty fast. I want to play around with her legendary a bit, actually.
Yeah, it just seems to be nuts. Like, scoring from almost anywhere, or, you know, do you set a model up within her shooting range?
Yeah.
Yeah, in their backfield for just whenever at that point you need to score a goal and you can just bounce off them or you know, swap with them or whatever, however it works.
Well, that was the thing. Like, okay, so if Route 1's not on the table, if you can't get that move towards the ball, how else do you set up shenanigans to get you to the ball? And I honestly haven't experimented enough. So, yeah, that could be fun.
It's definitely worth testing out. I mean, you know, given that obviously Blackheart's your number one.
He's my bae.
Yeah, he's fucking awesome. Rage is good, but I think, you know, when you've got access to three captains, fucking test them all out.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why I'm playing Smoke. It's, you know, I just want to get a bit more practice in.
Man, I've been playing a bit of Rage as well with Benediction.
Ooh.
Yeah, I wasn't... Like, I don't know that I love Benediction's playbook. It is momentous pretty much all the way through, and he does have high-end damage. But his ability to tank a midfield and have a free counterattack is great. He is also a really good bait piece. So if you're wanting to put somebody up the field to threat and you're worried about reprisal, then yeah, like 3-4 free counterattack, all right, seems okay.
Yeah, go in.
Double push on 2, attack 6, seems okay.
And if they charge, you can go to, you know, 4.
And the way he lights up Red Fury for Rage as well. Mm. You know, you can set up some interesting sort of arc node play with Harry.
I do like how they've done that. I mean, they've, you know, the range is still limited because Red Fury is a 4-inch range.
Yep, so it's Red Fury's got an 8-inch range from...
Yeah, which 8-inch
range
fantastic.
Plus base
yeah.
for Benny.
From Benny, yeah. And he's naturally in the scrum, so
yeah,
there's going to be someone around.
Yeah, he tanks like a motherfucker, man. He's pretty good.
So who do you play then, like with Rage? Because who does it, Benny go in for? It's the Harry slot, isn't it?
No, you play Harry as well. Okay. I just don't see a world in which you leave Harry at home. He's so good. He's so good. That two double push, momentous two double push on four.
Mm.
What the fuck, man?
Yeah, just sets up everyone else.
Yeah.
And he's just 2-inch melee, the extra crowd.
Yep.
Goad, fucking Molotov. We don't even need to say anything.
And you're shoveling everything into Strongbox's aura. Yeah. You know, just so much reposition in that team.
It's almost like a mouth on the pitch, isn't it?
It is,
funneling down the throat.
It is. And then you've got Rage just sitting back, waiting to go. Mm. Yeah, it's good. So I've been enjoying Rage. Played a few games, got a few wins.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. I like this.
Yeah. Bit slower than the old Blackheart, but Benny also lights up Mist, you know, because of the Silthetian dodge.
So it's another way of getting that extra and putting Mist to the nutso range again.
Yeah.
I do like that.
Yeah. So I was playing Gutter in that slot where I'm playing Benny now. And I can see an argument for both of them.
Yeah, I guess Gutter probably has a higher damage output, is that fair to say, and maybe can reel them in a bit better, but then...
Yeah, if she's set up properly, but the problem with Gutter is that, like, her damage output, unless you're hitting that scything blow, is pretty average.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, she does Life Drinker, which is great, but, yeah, tough hard models as well if she's only hitting that one.
It's not good. So he just fundamentally tanks a bit better then?
Yeah. And Harry becomes your DPS, and Rage, and Avarice, agreed.
So you just chop and change the order in which you basically... Nice.
Yeah. But it's a hard team to get takeouts on as well. Because the health box, the health pool is so high, you know, across multiple models, that you're not easily getting those takeouts. Like, Greed's the obvious one. Rage is probably the next obvious one.
I was going to say, Rage is the next one, but there's so much bad that comes along with that.
Yeah.
I think you have to go for Rage. Because, like in the Corsair lineup, you know, once you take that model out, then it, like, completely, you know, takes the heart out of the team.
Mm.
I mean, that, obviously, you can still smash the shit out of people. But I think taking Rage out is the big key, and it takes him a couple of turns to get back into the action.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
I guess Benny kind of stops that because you get the longer Red Fury range, but...
Yeah. Harry under Red Fury is no joke. It's good fun.
Sounds like shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, I'll knock you down. Oh, I'll stand back up. Okay, I'll Red Fury first. Harry knocks you down, and then I'll go again.
Yeah. Also, you can push models to a better spot for Rage. So, you know, Harry will be the setup piece, and then Rage gets his free charge off. And, you know, that's where the magic happens.
Fucking gross, yeah, is good. What it sounds like.
I don't, you know, if we go back to our conversation with Alex... I don't fault Alex for playing him so much.
Yeah.
I do fault Alex for that Harvest Market tirade, though.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so we're getting some made. We're in early talks. I've got to do a few illustrations to as to what we need. I think we need a few different sets. Possibly some illicit harvest markers as well. So that might be a bit of fun.
Marijuana crops.
Oh, that'd be fucking hilarious.
Coca
crops. You know, you could even just have a... pile of keys of cocaine.
Good. What about some fields of poppies?
Some poppies, that'd be great. We can do all of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some crystal meth plants. Alright, so we're just about here.
So roll in, have a chat on the way back, see how the slug's fucked.
Yeah.
See where one ended and the other one started. Hopefully no one gets 12-0'd, but hey, I'm quite prepared for that.
Indeed.
Surely I'll kill one model.
I think you'll kill more than one.
I'm sorry.
At least two.
At least two. Nice one.
Welcome back.
That's how I feel. Fuck you, Alex. Fuck you.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah.
What did we think was going to happen?
I think we fucking nailed it, didn't we? We absolutely nailed the result of that. Mainly, you know, my fantastic gameplay had a lot to do with it, but it's a, it's a definite good matchup for Shah. We'll just put it that way, shall we?
Yeah, I found Jack to be really useful in that game.
What, after Gut and String and Legendary?
Yeah.
It's pretty handy.
It's gross.
It is gross. So it rolled out. I received. I then really struggled to hide the ball. And struggled to basically get in enough on your models. And when I kind of got it humming, the game was too far gone at that point. You'd already got your two goals, and then I'm spending activations to try to get the ball off and kill it to stop you scoring that last goal, basically. Yes. So. Yeah.
No, it was just a case of what happened. Shark got his first turn goal.
Yep.
And then knee slided back.
Oh, shit.
How is that? How is that a thing?
Oh, my God. Knee slotted back to the halfway line.
Gets behind an obstacle so that Boar can't charge him in that line. So you then use Brisket to quick time Boar, and Boar charges a marked target Shark.
To get the distance,
Didn't quite kill him, though. I think your dice crapped out a bit. It was probably on the table.
Left him on, what, four, did we say? Something like that.
Yeah, because you were still in... Boar was in Ox's Aura.
Yeah, he was just dishing out the damage. So got the KD and the... Yeah. Had to take the KD.
You're a bit unlucky not to kill him,
And that would have been good, because I actually had, what was it, man marking or whatever, that plus two influence, which I reckon would have been helpful. Because there were a few times that I found that 11 influence was just a little bit too light.
Yeah.
And I found receiving with Vet Brisket, as much as you want to kind of get a first turn goal, she just doesn't have the threat range. And because Fish threats so deep up the board.
Yep. Tidal Surge.
I mean, maybe what I needed to do is pass to her early, dodge her up, let you score that goal, and then she's within distance to actually get the snapback. Might have been a better play. But I think all in all, Fillet just looks like a much better matchup into Fish. Like, if you win the roll and kick to into Fish, you can really pin them down and do some serious work on them. It was slugs fucking, from my point of view, that's what it looked like.
Yeah, for me it was just like, I mean, you in an attempt to kill the ball, you took Tenderizer and moved the ball quite far back after that first Shark goal.
Yeah.
So what that meant for me is I just use my pressure pieces to get up. Grayscales goes in, whacks Ox a little bit, generates some momentum, bounces off, goes in, basically snaps the ball up and, you know, scores his second goal.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to say in a convoluted way is the Fish ability to get wherever they want and score a goal versus Butchers is... You know, it's overwhelming.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just don't know how you can hide the ball.
Nah, and that's... I mean, it was after you'd legendaried turn two, like top of two you went, because you knew Shark was about to die.
Yeah.
You did the legendary anyway, generated a bit, healed him a bit, gut and strung. That's when I killed the ball behind my line, because at that point, I was really just looking for the takeouts. The momentum, you'd kind of... like nailed my team down to the floor where I couldn't move around.
Yeah.
And so at that point I'm like, right, I just want to get a few models killing, you know, Shark and maybe doing some damage on some other models. The momentum's probably not relevant at this point because some of my models couldn't move. So
And then after everything is legendary on, using Jack to just heroic and blow everything 4 inches away.
Yeah, that was pretty gross.
Yeah, shot Boar right down.
So I mean, there's definitely things I learned playing Ox. I think he's pretty cool. I love the aura. I mean, just the insane level of damage you can get. I definitely think you do not need tooled up. But, you know, on legendary turn, you're just doing gross amounts of damage when you get the butchery off.
Yeah.
So, I think
you really did kill Jack when you...
No, it's...
Like, the takeout that you got was definitive. It was like you made a statement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That statement was, if I'm going to go down, 12-2 is the way I'm going down.
Get it past the ladies.
Just.
Hit it past the ladies.
Just. I didn't even get the ball past the fucking halfway.
Fuck, man, you didn't even get a second game.
No.
Jacob never rocked up.
No, well, what I've discovered is that he didn't get a reply. So I think he didn't think he was going to get a game. So.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So we'll line up one next week.
Awesome.
He also said he inhaled a whole bunch of chemicals at work, so hey, you know, why not?
Oh, awesome. Yeah. Deliberately?
Yeah, probably.
Right.
Yeah. Just snorting it.
Free chemicals. Chromium.
Is that what it's called? I don't know.
Yeah.
Those kids. Kids of today.
Man, they pay strength is cheap.
Yeah.
Life is cheap. So I got a second game, into Shark. Played.
Fuck Shark.
Yeah.
Oh, it was Jed.
Yeah, it's 12-4.
How's so. He coming along? Like, he's a newer player, so.
Yeah, I think he kicked off to me, and then I just retrieved the ball and killed the ball, and, you know, he moved Siren up pretty far, so that in between activations, like, what really set me up was, like, Coin got the ball at one point during the first turn, passed to Blackheart, and I had already committed that either way, if I was going to lose the ball, I'd rather have Blackheart up the field and able to do some shit.
Yeah.
He had Siren, he kicked up with Siren, which I don't know that that was the right move, but anyway, Coin passes to Blackheart, misses the pass, the ball scatters to, like, just behind Blackheart so that he can snap it if he wants. So I leave it unsnapped, he does something, Blackheart then snaps the ball, passes the ball to Harry, who was next to him, uses that to dodge up four, walks into Siren after being tooled up by Rage, and he's got five influence left, and he does, you know, enough damage to take her out in one activation.
Kills her,
So that was pretty good. She had four on her, so...
Killing influence is a thing.
It's great. She can't do anything. Then Shark has, like, a super suboptimal activation because Harry's on the baseline with the ball. So, you know, can't really get the ball first turn. So then Shark, he made the decision to move Shark into the midfield. And what that basically meant is that Shark was just set up to die.
Yeah, exactly.
And he did.
When you've got Harry, Avarice, all the front murders.
So it's a case of, like, all right, go up 4 points. Then the next turn, Blackheart had the ball, and a very damaged Siren was in the backfield. So, you know, give him six, go in, do five damage, score a goal. So this is one activation. At that point, it's like 10-0.
Yeah.
So the game was over. We played it out. Angel got a goal. Then Grayscales got punched into the dirt. So
you do think that, or do you think that's part of the learning curve, though, is understanding the increments at which the VPs come, and then kind of how to angle that to get the 6 points, or the timing of the back-to-back ones and things like that?
Yeah, I think that's right.
I've noticed that. Like, it's something I'll see with some newer players, and where, yeah, they just, their timing's wrong when they go in to try to score, or when they, you know, go for a takeout, or don't try to set up a takeout for the next turn, you know, just thinking turns ahead.
Or even say to themselves, is it better not to send this model in at this point? Because I may generate a couple of momentum right now, but ultimately I'm going to lose that player in an activation the next turn.
And 5 or 6 momentum as
well.
Yeah,
that's right.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? Because you often look at it and go, oh, I really need the 2 to get an even dice roll for momentum. And if you do it, you charge them in, you think you're doing the right thing, and then you lose the roll, well, then you're bleeding well over the 2 that you just generated in the next turn, and then potentially creating a snowball against yourself for the other team.
Yeah, and I guess, like, Shark as well, you know, if... He's the core of the team.
Yeah.
Basically, like, if he's not getting 4 to 8 points, even 12 points in a game, you know, what's the team actually doing? But absolutely. Particularly if he kicks off and misses that first turn goal, he loses tempo.
Yeah. And then he's fucked at that point.
Then he's fucked. Yeah, too much Shark for me tonight, my friend.
Yeah. Might need to line up. I just want to go back to playing, you know, one of my other teams, you know.
Yeah, so the next slugfuck, I think what we'll do is, instead of just getting a ridiculous matchup, let's get, like, a hilarious matchup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we did talk about that, you know. I mean, we'll let someone nominate it, but, like, mate, you know, a large base, Esther's lineup or something weird like that.
Yeah, condition game on condition game.
Yeah, actually, that'd be pretty fun.
You know, two ridiculous scoring teams, maybe.
Pretty quick. Well, that was the other thing. The game was super quick because it was, you know, 3 goals and 1 takeout. It was, what, 45-minute game?
It was super fast.
I mean, we generally play pretty quick, though, so...
I'm willing to concede that Slugfuck may be, like, a one-off idea.
After that one.
I blame Alex for it.
Fucking
Alex.
Oh, my God. You ruined it. You ruined Slugfuck.
Straight off the bat.
It's not our gameplay, the problem here.
Bartsy.
I reckon Esther's large base team would be funny. You know, Pint Pot, Mash, Stave, Everest. Who else can you get in there? Surely there's another large base in there we can sneak in. Oh, the dog.
It's the dog, Quaff.
Quaff.
Well, maybe this is the thing. Maybe we'd like throw this to Twitter and say if people want to give us a matchup, maybe we'll do a cardboard slug fuck every so often.
Yeah, that's
good.
When
somebody comes up with a really, really good idea, we'll put it into practice.
Come up with the complete teams, we're fine with that. I mean, Alex just gave us the two captains, but I don't mind just ridiculous team being played. And that's all good.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to keep up the flaming shit on a stick standard.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, we possibly just reached too far tonight. It's too much.
I think it was moist shit on a stick tonight, and it didn't light. The flame didn't catch. It was too wet.
A retardant on it.
This Yevle goat retardant.
Do you reckon that's what they, like, I was thinking about the whole Yevle goat. Do you reckon they were firing, like, flaming arrows, like, a la Barcelona Olympics style, at the goat?
Glorious, wouldn't it? That'd be amazing.
Surely they're getting creative with how they take it down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, what do? Do they just, get some jiffy firelighters, tuck them down the bottom of the goat?
The old sparkler bomb approach.
Do they light the goat from the bottom? Is that too obvious?
Yeah.
Does a goat burn from the head?
Or do you just napalm it from the sky like, some guy that's part of the military has just got enough like this?
I kind of want to go and see this goat.
On fire.
Yeah.
I love it.
Marshmallows.
Mm.
Warm. Yeah, all right.
Well, nice one.
Okay. It was kind of a misfire.
Yeah. Nah, look, I think that was fine. I think what we've established is don't play that matchup. It's shit. It's shit for the Butchers player, especially when they don't play Butchers that much. That's even worse.
And, Shark continues to be a fuckboy.
He is the fuckboy. Well done, Shark.
Mm. And on that happy note...
On that happy note...
Fuck you,
Alex. Welcome back. That was indeed a slugfuck at the end. I do apologise for that.
It's all right, man. You don't need to apologise to anybody. I think the blame lies entirely elsewhere.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I have been abusing Alex all morning. So, So I thought that was a pretty good episode. I really did enjoy the chat to Alex. I thought it was kind of cool. Obviously, if people have been on social media, they see that we like to have a lot of jousting with Alex. So it was kind of cool to get him on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we can say an unlikely friendship was almost formed, but that doesn't mean that social media jousting is going to stop by any measure.
No, absolutely. We've already got onto our Harvest Marker production, and they will be affectionately named after Botsy. So.
Yes. So we're going to have a number of different types of Harvest Markers. We're looking at marijuana crops, crops. We'll have the traditional pumpkin.
Poppies, maybe?
Yes, throwing, poppies. Yeah, yeah, and some meth plants as well.
Nice. It's going to be quality. We want to just cater to all the farmers out there. Indeed. It's not their fault that their produce becomes illicit at the end. So yeah
terrible, terrible shame.
So do we have any news or any other shout outs?
Well, we do, Cam. I think it's important to draw attention to Australian Guildball Nationals, which is coming up. That's on the weekend of the 26th and 27th of August at 3D6 in Canberra. It's actually a two-day mini convention for Guildball, and it's the first time it's been done in Australia. So we're currently hovering at about 15 or 16 registered players. We're obviously wanting to get that as high as possible. So I think the best thing for people to do if they're interested is jump on, pre-reg. There's a pinned post on the Guildball Australia Facebook page, or you can jump on to the 3D6 website, 3d6.com.au, and you can buy your ticket in store. You've already mentioned that we're going to provide stubby holders for people who have pre-regged.
All the pre-regged, absolutely.
I think anybody who pre-regges goes into the running for a limited edition mist, but again, we just want to get that national tournament as large as we can, and of course, the prize for winning nationals is a trip overseas to Chicago. So
get the motivation's on it. There. Absolutely, absolutely.
I think we've got another local tournament we wanted to talk
we
about.
We do. We've got our good mate Timmy Wyatt is running one up at Harlequin Hall. So this is for all the Adelaide guys, or in fact, the last Harlequin Hall one saw Tobias fly in for it. So
if you're feeling like you want to come down, we can definitely hook you up with accommodation with someone and come on down for a tourney. It's on Saturday the 29th of July. I don't think any posts have gone up yet, but if you contact Timmy or us at Double Dodge or just on Facebook, we'll be able to hook you up and tell you all the details of it. So
yeah, and you know, if you come down, we'll make sure to smash your models.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
That's just how we do it down here.
It's tradition. It's tradition
in the dirty South. So yeah, I reckon that's about it, and we'll be back.
We will be. So
getting close to the magical number 20 episode. Next one's episode 19, but after that, we'll have to do something special.
Absolutely. Some kind of celebration, fireworks, maybe just let off a pipe bomb or something.
Yeah, let's do that.
Blow up someone's model. That's what we're going to do. We're going to strap it.
Oh, on video!
Yeah, and then we'll film it, put it up online. Fantastic. That's our celebration.
We still have to put up your watermelon eating video.
Oh, shit. Yes. I even bought a watermelon specifically for that, too.
All right. You got the GoPro. We'll make a weekend of it.
Sweet.
So, episode 18, done and dusted.
All right, we're out.
And Diglett.
Yep.